BFM 89.9. Welcome to Unpacking Malaysian Cinema, where we take stock of the issues facing the Malaysian film industry. I'm your host, Thomas Barker. What is a Malaysian film, and what is the state of the Malaysian film today? Two seemingly simple questions, which are in fact quite difficult to answer. In this eight-part series, we will explore these two questions here on BFM. Discussion of the Malaysian film industry seems to be never-ending. One minute we are celebrating its success stories, while lamenting its problems with seemingly no solution. We have seen box office successes with the likes of Ola Bola, Police Evo and Munafik, critical acclaim for Jagat, and an overseas premiere of Interchange. We have also seen ongoing debates around censorship, language categories for the Festival Film Malaysia Awards, and a large protest by film crews called Switch Off. Over the coming episodes, we will explore these topics and more to try and understand Malaysian cinema today. We look at animation, censorship, labour issues, film production, indies, film festivals, and online distribution. In this first episode, we seek answers to the question, what is a Malaysian film?
Apakah maksud hidup tanpa pelbagai suasana?
Malaysia is a multi-ethnic country, home to almost 32 million people, 3.3 million or 10% of whom are non-Malaysian citizens. Following the official statistical categories, 68.6% of the population of Bumiputera, 23.4% Chinese and 7% Indian. It is also a nation whose most important divides include the peninsula and Borneo, rich and poor, urban and rural, Muslim and non-Muslim. Malaysia also has aspirations to be a developed country by 2020. This cannot just be in economic terms or physical infrastructure, but also in terms of maturity of debate, safety and well-being, and of course, a thriving arts and culture. Are films still relevant? We went out onto the streets of Kuala Lumpur to ask people what they thought about Malaysian film and what they think a Malaysian film is.
Malaysian film, to me, something that represents my country. It doesn't matter if it's a Malay, Chinese, Indian. For the last 10 years, I see the quality of the movies going down to drain. Only love movies, typical Malay, rich kid, love, kampung girls. Nothing new. I used to watch it from Jemapo to Manchester, Hashimuddin Rais, Rahim Razali movie. That time was good. Now, all typical Yusof Aslam movie. Nothing's good.
Film to Malaysia ni untuk film orang Melayu lah. Dalam bahasa Melayu semua.
I think Malaysian films... Actually, to be honest, I don't like Malaysian film. Because the from Malaysian director, like some Yusof or that, their genre is only one, like... KL Dream, all about the gangster or that. It's not Malaysian culture.
What to you is Malaysian culture?
To me, I like more like sepet or that kind of genre. Because we are Malaysian, we are one country, so we have many races, but like Chinese, Indian, so they portray that type of culture in Malaysia.
People certainly like films and enjoy them as entertainment, but films are more than just a fun Sunday afternoon at a mall. They are also about us, about who we are as a people. Let's hear what Amir Muhammad has to say in this clip from Wu Ming Jin's film, Return to Nostalgia.
I think cinema can be whatever it wants to be, and it will always reflect the society that is making it.
Scholars and critics have attempted to define what a Malaysian film is. Film scholar Hassan Mutalib writes in his book Malaysian Cinema in a Bottle that historically there was only a Malay cinema, but over the past decade, new Chinese, Tamil and English voices have emerged to create a multilingual and multiracial Malaysian cinema. But does a Malaysian film have to be made in Malaysia, with a Malaysian director and a Malaysian cast? Does it have to be in Malay, the official language of the Federation? James Wan, for example, who directed Fast and Furious 7, Insidious and The Conjuring, was born in Kuching, grew up in Australia, but now works in the United States. Are his films in any way Malaysian? This question is really about how we see ourselves as a community sharing a common identity, heritage, and destiny, and how we see ourselves reflected on the cinema screen. But if there is one place we should really start, that's with the work of P. Ramlee, a figure many regard as the model Malaysian filmmaker.
Ma, putuskan saja pertunangan saya dengan Abang Ismail.
Putuskan? Kau ni dah gila ya.
Kembalikanlah loket ini kepada Abang Ismail.
Sabria!
Talk about Malaysian cinema, and people will immediately mention P. Ramlee, born in Penang in 1929. P. Ramlee acted, directed, wrote and scored over 60 films between 1948 and 1972, before his death in 1973 at the young age of 44. Most of his films were made in Singapore for the Shaw Brothers Studios. Many remember P. Ramlee for his songs and humour, his characters, and the way in which he addressed serious issues such as class difference, modernity, intercultural interaction in a popular and easy-to-digest format. P. Ramlee played characters such as a musician, betchak driver, labourer, and used these characters to explore social change in Malayan society at the time. Here, Hassan Mutalib talks further with Gek Ku about the themes of P. Ramlee's work.
The 1950s were really interesting times. You know, it was just after the war, people didn't have food, people didn't have money, and so on. And everything was happening in Singapore, because that's where the entertainment was, the commercial aspects. Mm-hmm. So when they all converged in Singapore, these were people who had to leave behind their families, their relatives, and so on. And Singapore was so different to them. And most of them began to forget their roots. Now, P. Ramlee was someone who looked at his own race, and he was observing all these things that were happening. And he articulated all this in his films. And what he did was, he was a Malay. And you know, in Malay, traditional Malay society, you do not criticize people directly. And so he found film to be a very important medium.
P. Ramlee also used his films as a means to send a message to audiences. Using Pendekar Bujang Lapuk as an example, Hassan Mutalib discusses how P. Ramlee argued that education was crucial to improving the social and economic position of the Malay community.
I think Pendekar Bujang Lapuk is a very unusual film, which hasn't been really talked about yet. So here's a film which encapsulates almost all of what he has been saying in all his other films. Now, what the overriding theme of this film is that only education can bring the Malays out of the suffering or the tribulations that they are having.
Because the three guys are actually illiterate, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes, they
three
are
bachelors.
Illiterate, yeah. So if you look at the technique of portraying it, which is as important as the story itself, you can see that the right side is supposed to denote Singapore. The left side is supposed to denote Malaya.
What do you mean by the right side and the left side? Of the screen?
Well, you know the space being used in cinema, the right and the left has got meanings. Mm-hmm. Whether you put the character in the center or the right or the top left, all have different meanings. Mm-hmm. So the right side here physically denotes the geographical space of Singapore, and the left is Malaya. So you can see that P. Ramlee is actually saying they leave the right side to the left side on a boat. So symbolically, it means leave all these bad elements behind, which are actually degrading you, where Malays who have succeeded, but you find that their language is so coarse, their behavior is so bad, they steal money. And even the boss himself, you can see visually that he's dressed like an Englishman, that is visually articulating something about the British and the bad influences they have brought upon the Malays.
Another theme evident in P. Ramlee's films was the disapproving stance towards the feudal system. Daniel Kadir, who wrote the 2015 book Membedah P. Ramlee, notes this as a recurring theme in P. Ramlee's movies.
Sebenarnya, kita lihat kembali sewaktu era filem-filem P. Ramlee ini lah waktu sekitar tahun 50-an hingga tahun 50-an-60-an. Itu ialah waktu berlaku dekolonisasi, waktu di mana negara dalam keadaan untuk membebaskan diri dari penjajah. Jadi sikap anti-penjajah itu cukup jelas dalam filem-filem P. Ramlee. Dan penjajah ini merujuk pada golongan atasan, feudal dan sebagainya. Jadi kritikan-kritikan ini adalah satu kritikan yang secara terus disampaikan. Kita dapat lihat contohnya dalam filem Pendekar Bujang Lapuk, di mana watak Ketua Samsing, lakonan Mat Nisfu itu, digayakan seperti seorang Inggeris. Dapat lihat dari segi pakaian, dari topi, baju dan sebagainya. Dan kita dapat juga lihat dalam filem Antara Dua Darjat, kedudukan soal feudal itu dibincangkan dengan berani, dengan lebih besar. Dan ketika yang lebih tajam, kita dapat lihat dalam filem Musang Berjanggut, di mana dilihatkan di situ bahawa golongan atasan ataupun golongan pemerintah dan sebagainya dilihat sebagai golongan yang sering menggunakan kuasa tanpa ada kawalan dan sebagainya. Ini ialah satu kritikan yang sebenarnya tidak ditujukan kepada pihak-pihak yang khusus dan sebagainya, tapi ialah satu kritikan yang besar maknanya. Dan ini adalah sebagai satu tanda peringatan kepada golongan-golongan yang feudal yang berkaitan.
For Daniel Kadir, P. Ramlee's films provide a reflection of his times and remain relevant due to the fact that they are based on social issues.
Adakah P. Ramlee ini seorang yang peka terhadap persekitaran dia sehingga kan dia boleh memasukkan nilai-nilai seperti begini dalam filemnya?
Sudah tentu kalau ditanyakan pada saya, saya bersetuju dengan pandangan berkenaan. Dan ini adalah salah satu elemen yang perlu ada kepada pembikin filem, perlu peka dalam persekitaran mereka. Kerana kita sebenarnya perlu membuat filem, filem-filem yang realistik, filem yang berkaitan dengan situasi sebenar. Jadi itu akan menjadikan filem berkenaan dekat dengan masyarakat. Ini yang dibuat P. Ramlee. Beliau membikin filem-filem yang dekat dengan masyarakat. Dan P. Ramlee juga ialah seorang pencerita yang baik dan menyebabkan kita sentiasa terikut dan tertarik dengan filem-filemnya.
Not only was he a great entertainer, P. Ramlee set a high bar for Malaysian filmmakers who have come after him. It seems both the Malaysian character and the Malaysian film have changed dramatically since the 1950s and 1960s. Malaysia has been independent for 60 years, and social change and national development have altered the way we think about Malaysia and the place of the cinema screen. Looking at Malaysian cinema, you might not see one cinema, but four, differentiated by language and thus target audience. Malaysia's so-called four cinemas comprise Malay, Chinese, Tamil, and English films. Film scholar Norman Yusuf from University Teknologi Mara provides some background to Malaysia's four cinemas and the consequences for the local film industry.
How does the categorization of Malay, Tamil, Chinese, and English cinemas affect film viewership in our country?
That has been the practice in Malaysia, even before we get independence, right, of this divide and rule policy. And then we just continue the legacy of the colonialists, you know. I personally experience this when I go to the cinema to watch Tamil films. I'm a big fan of Madhuratnam films. So when I go to watch Madhuratnam films at the movie theatre, and then the girl at the counter would ask me, "Hello, abang, ini film Tamil." "Hi, bro. This is a Tamil film." "Yes, I know. Saya tahu ini Tamil film. So what?" So it's a sad fact that this is happening in Malaysia, but we can understand why. Our society, Malaysian society in general, is very much segregated and even, you know, linguistically and ethnically divisive. Our education system, even the TV and radio channels, all very much divisive. It's the practice. I mean, certain things, it's not something bad or negative. Some things work, but some things just do not work. Yes, I think we should welcome the attempt to have diverse, this linguistically and culturally diverse films.
After the break, we will discuss the international reception of local films, modern Malaysian cinema, and the urban-rural divide. You're tuned into Unpacking Malaysian Cinema. I'm Thomas Barker on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to Unpacking Malaysian Cinema. I'm your host, Thomas Barker. In this episode, we explore the definition of Malaysian cinema. Before the break, we were discussing the history of Malaysian cinema during P. Ramlee's era and the issue of language segregation in Malaysia's four cinemas. These four cinemas seemed to collide in August 2016 when controversy erupted around the Festival Film Malaysia implementing a Malay language policy for the best film category, since Bahasa Malaysia is the national language. This would have disqualified favourites Ola Bola and Jagat from consideration. After much debate and acrimony, Jagat and Ola Bola were reinstated, with Jagat going on to win Best Film. Jagat, a Tamil language film directed by Sanjay Kumar Purumal, is the story of a boy growing up in a poor Indian community in the 1990s. But is it a Malaysian film? Siva Perenian, the executive producer of Jagat, thinks that it is.
We don't call Jagat Indian film, Tamil film, no. Because even in the first, we said to the distributor, GSC, TGV, this is a Malaysian film. And they have this kind of mentality. For Tamil movie, okay, only I can give you 15 cinemas or 20 cinemas. If the movie is in Malay, I can go you up to 50 to 100 screens. And we say, this is a Malaysian movie. This is not a Malay movie, this is not a Tamil movie. And they don't really buy that, what we does. So even after the movie is released and people started to watch the movie, even Finas also say this is a Malaysian movie when they publish in their Facebook group. And Jagat is going to New York Asian Film Festival, said Malaysian film Jagat is being screened at New York Asian Film Festival. So there is the phrase already, Malaysian film, this is not a Tamil film. Because if we go outside Malaysia, we go to New York, they'll call it a Malaysian film, they don't call it a Tamil film. So, but only when we come into the Malaysia, I mean, inside Malaysia, people referring this as a Tamil movie, this is a Mandarin movie, a Cantonese movie, or a Malay movie. So end of the day, as a filmmaker, language for us is not a tool. The images are the tool. A language is actually secondary in the cinema. Jagat is a Malaysian movie, and we always committed to make Malaysian movie, not a language-based movie.
To others, such as director-writer Aziz Osman, this sense of diversity and multiculturalism are in fact the defining features of modern Malaysia. The diversity of people and cultures influences the use of language in films.
I give priority to the local language, which is Bahasa Malaysia. But in the other area, film are film. We are unique in a way. For us here, we might understand and speak Malay among us when we meet, but when we go home, we speak our mother tongue. That's very natural. So I would understand when an Indian filmmaker want to make an Indian based on their background, and due to the storytelling is much more natural telling in their own natural way, then I would agree on that. I've already watched Jagat. I've already watched Ola Bola. If we send to the outside film festival and showing Jagat, this is a Malaysian film, and all Malaysian speaks Tamil, Indian? I mean, that's the question. So we got to explain.
According to Norman Yusuf, language is not an issue. He spoke to our reporter, Avina Irene.
Do you think that the use of mother tongue in film sets a barrier to interracial relationships?
I think no, it's not an issue. Even Malaysians in general are so used to appreciate and watch films with different languages. I think that is never an issue, right?
Concerning language in Jagat and Ola Bola, do you think language is a crucial factor that affects the success of a film?
No, I don't think so. If you look at films like The Journey, Ola Bola, and then if you look at Police Evo, Bubble Boy and Munafik, they are made in different languages and they achieve enormous commercial success in the context of Malaysian cinema. So I do not think people would go and watch a specific film because of language, but because of other factors. If you look at previous films, very few actually achieve commercial success, you know, like Ola Bola. For example, Spinning Kasing, made by Tek Tan, was not that well received when it was released in English and then in some other languages like Malay and a bit of Cantonese, if I'm not mistaken. But Malaysian viewers, you know, it's hard to predict.
For independent filmmaker Leo Seng Tat, the director and producer of Lelaki Harapan Dunia and Flower in the Pocket, language should not be the main criteria used to define a Malaysian film.
For me, ideally, in a romantic way, it should be stories that reflect our society, reflect who we are. Doesn't take into account the language, because variety is the word when it comes to defining Malaysian cinema. But if I were to go technical about it, it's all about ticking boxes, like where the money coming from, the investment, whether it's fully funded by Malaysians, is Malaysian money or not, whether it's shot here or not. Because if you're talking about a Malaysian story but shot somewhere else with Malaysian cast and Malaysian director, but will you call that a Malaysian film? I don't know. I mean, language-wise, might be entirely in English or, you know, depending on which country where the film is set. Then we have to start ticking boxes. I don't know. For me, I try not to be so analytical about these kind of things. For me, it's just as simple as stories that are from here. I think whatever I do, I try to tell a story from here. Stories that I can relate to without pretending to be anybody else, but me as someone who grew up here. If I stay true to that, then I think that will have many elements of Malaysian thing in it.
The recent focus on language, however, has distracted us from other ingredients that should be taken into account. If finding a definition locally is so hard, it is also because we still debate who is a Malaysian. Perhaps the answer to our question might come from outside. How do outsiders see us, and can they tell us something about who we are? We spoke to Najwa Abubakar, producer with Astro Shore, who is well aware of Malaysia's image to overseas audiences.
You have said that you aim to produce movies that have international appeal while retaining a unique Malaysian voice. Could you please elaborate on that?
When I said that, it was really our experience going through international festivals and market and trying to distribute our films outside Malaysia. And one of the key things that we observed was that it was very easy to identify what made a Filipino film and that international audiences could identify with, or what made a Thai film, a Korean film, even a Japanese film for that matter. And now, what makes a Singapore film? But people have a really hard time, I think, thinking about what makes a Malaysian film. But I think we can get there. I think we have to embrace and challenge the fact that we Malaysians have actually very unique stories. And because because I think of our shared experiences with our diversity, we can come up with some very interesting stories. And that's what I mean. What is it international audience would look to in terms of Malaysian films to say, aha, that's a Malaysian film, that's a Malaysian voice, and that they can pick out immediately our voice and our unique appeal.
Do you think that a Malaysian movie can retain its Malaysian characteristic despite being directed by foreign directors?
Ultimately, I would say it would depend on the story and how personal the story is either to the writer or to the director. If we take a story like Cemetery of Splendor or his other films, Cemetery of Splendor is a film by Apit Chapong Wirasitako. He wrote it and directed it. I don't think anyone apart from Apit Chapong, who happens to be a Thai, could write and direct that story and share that experience. I would think it's a challenge if it was a Malaysian story being helmed by a foreign director. I'm not saying it's impossible, but ultimately it depends on what the story is, whose voice is being told in that story, and what kind of sensibility needs to be shared through that story. I'm sure there's a lot of local or very specific elements that can only be known by a person of that country's origin, and that foreign person may not be able to do so. But yet again, I would say it probably goes back to the story, because even in Hollywood, if it was an English language film or an American film, you still find foreign directors. I think it depends, A, on the story and how homogenous that story is.
What are some of the responses from international audiences towards your movies? How do you think international audiences view Malaysian movies?
Well, for the first part, international audiences and their response towards our movies, there are very specific films that we would send through to international festivals for that matter. And there are stories that which we think will have that appeal to festivals. So generally, we've brought, I think at least in the last 3 years, we've brought several of our films. For example, The Journey, Terbaik Dari Langit, and most recently, Ola Bola. The audiences have been very receptive because we've tried to show certain unique elements like culture, universal themes but are localized to Malaysia as well, to also show specific scenes that people have in their minds because of what they perceive, but when they see something else in movies they go, this is something I really didn't expect at all. And Terbaik Dari Langit did that, actually. I think for us, it got selected for Tokyo International Film Festival. The category was Asian Futures for first and second time filmmakers. That was in November 2014. They loved that story. They loved how quirky it was. It was a quirky poster. And they liked that the story was about friendship and searching for the truth, searching for meaning of life. And those are stories that I feel appeal to international audiences. People like The Journey because we brought it to Italy for the Udine Far East Asian Festival, and that was in 2014 as well. And they liked it because the story premised on clashing cultures, family and bonding. I think they liked that aspect because we had people coming up to us, specifically it was this German, if I'm not mistaken, he was a journalist, and he said, oh my god, that's what I go through with my Korean girlfriend's father. I can completely identify with that. So I would say that if the story is right, it will appeal.
In an article from Forbes.com, you said that you analyse your moviegoers to determine the type of movie that they want to watch. In your opinion, what kind of movies are Malaysian attracted to?
Unlike international audiences, mass commercial movies will always be the first appeal. I mean, I'm not a snob, and I would say I look forward to summer blockbusters. Mm-hmm. And there's no such thing really as a summer blockbuster, right? It's Hollywood blockbusters all year round nowadays. But at the same time, I feel that people also appreciate, probably in smaller groups, you know, festival-driven, art house type of films. But if you look at mass audiences, the audiences that actually go to the cinemas to pay for tickets, you cannot get away from the genres of action, horror, animation for that matter, right? I would say that those films certainly have a bigger appeal. But I think that one you can't get away with, right? I'm seeing at least a trend where people are starting to become more appreciative of films that also deliver a message. Universal themes such as family,
friendship, love story,
friendship, spirituality, mm-hmm. Right? Those, if told in a very engaging way, people will watch. And I think one more point to add to that is that what we did was we actually conducted an audience research a few years back. And to really understand to the extent of minuscule details like, what is it that you look for in a poster? What is it that you look for in a movie trailer? What is it about that teaser video that provokes questions in you whether you want to watch that film or not? And what do you look for when you're at the cinema? What is the marketing message that attracts you most? So I think these are some of the insights that we got from the audience research.
Since P. Rumley's time, local films have undergone several significant transitions. The question here is, what is modern Malaysian cinema? Norman Yusof again offers a broad view of how Malaysian cinema has evolved.
Modern Malaysian cinema has witnessed something different, has evolved from the old black and white films to films made in the post-studio era, as well as after the new millennium especially. There are a wider range of genres being explored and themes being depicted and addressed. They are following global cinematic trends. For example, after the new millennium, horror films emerged as the most popular genre in Malaysian cinema. And then beginning in 2011, a slew of action films appeared after the enormous commercial success and popularity of KL Gangster, directed by Shamsul Yusof. There are also other genres that emerge. For example, sports films, which I believe very much been influenced by American sport films, you know, like Jejak Warriors, Rembat, and then Ola Bola by Chu Keng Guan. So in terms of themes, more or less, they are themes and issues very much similar to films made during the golden age, as well as films made in the 80s and 90s. But there are also other issues and themes which began to be explored, especially after the new millennium, with the emergence of independent filmmakers, the younger generation of filmmakers that deal with social themes and more critical issues, you know, being depicted and addressed.
In a 2009 episode of Big Picture, we featured James Lee, one of the pioneers of the Malaysian digital film movement and an independent producer under his production house, Doghouse 73 Pictures. His first Malay language horror film, Hysteria, differed from his previous independent films.
Now let's talk about Hysteria. It's your first mainstream horror Malay language movie. It was released last year. It was a box office success. Yes. It's a change, right, from your other styles of movies and things? Why did you decide on a horror movie and why in Malay?
In fact, it's not a decision that I made last year. Since I've started making films, I always wanted to make mainstream films. There's been films that people want to watch, will pay money.
Starring
and watch.
Awi.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to me, it took me about 7 years to find a chance to get into this project. Because I think the bad thing about getting recognized for all these independent films and awards is nobody kind of like believe that I could do something mainstream. Throughout the 7 years, I talked to a lot of producers about doing commercial works, you know, but once they seen my art house film, they're like, oh my God, I'm going to give him 1 million right. ringgit to do something like that. No way, you know. It's not a choice I made last year, but very long I was looking for this chance to make commercial films.
Hysteria was aimed, as he says, for a mainstream audience where it was well received, taking in almost 3 million ringgit at the box office. Malaysian audiences like horror films. James Lee explains that mainstream films are what Malaysian audiences prefer to watch in local cinemas, even if it is a horror genre.
Hai jin si hantu raya. Jin kuning, jin putih. Hantu raya si jembalang air. Mari sini datang. Penuh ni kecil sangatlah. Mana aku boleh baca?
A genre often ridiculed for its simplicity or potential to lead Malaysian youth astray. There is space for both the popular and the more serious, as James Lee's own filmmaking practice tells us. Many local films feature stories and people from big cities in peninsular Malaysia, especially Kuala Lumpur, whilst rural areas in East Malaysia are relatively underrepresented. This issue of the urban-rural divide further problematizes the notion of unity in this country and what has been regarded as a Malaysian film. In a 2014 episode of Night on Earth here on BFM, we invited Liu Seng Tat to offer his views on this issue.
We now live in much more kind of urban, environments. We hardly even know our neighbour's name, let alone, help them out with anything. And I mean, the fact that you said that you want to tell a story about unity, and this seems to be an issue in Malaysia now about, you know, what unity is. Why do you feel this need to tell such a story?
In my writing, it's always based on my observation and, things that happen around me.
So is there a lack of unity in Malaysia?
No, that's the thing. This movie is also about perception. It's how you look at it. You can look at it as black or white, both ways. Same thing, but different kind of point of view. People who get together for the same thing, and then because of something that happened, they also... It's actually the same thing, but people have different perspectives, so they either unite or they fall apart.
I mean, we often hear this sort of discussion framed in, like, you know, us versus them, urban versus rural. What's your feeling of these sort of dichotomies that we kind of see? Maybe the media is overhyping it. You know, do different communities in Malaysia have different, I don't know, expectations, different dreams, different goals?
This movie particularly, I don't focus on a specific community. This whole setting of the film takes place in a kampung, but it's actually, in a general sense, relating this issue to mankind, not urban or kampung.
But it's a very Malaysian story, isn't it?
It is a very Malaysian story, but at the same time, because it has some universal quality to it, that's why the film can travel and people can relate to the issue. Whether they are from Malaysia, from Kampung or KL, or they've never been to Malaysia before, they can relate to this story.
For Seng Tat, as long as the film is set in Malaysia, it is a Malaysian film to an international audience. Some of the biggest films at the local box office in the last couple of years have been films that did not stick to one location, but showed a diversity of settings and characters. Police Evo saw a KL-based police officer transferred to Terengganu. Ola Bola shows the diversity of characters of different races and origins coming together as a single national football team. And The Journey traces a route across Malaysia as Benji and his soon-to-be father-in-law travel across rural Malaysia to deliver wedding invitations to the father's friends. Researching and understanding who the people are and their way of life in the lesser-known parts of Malaysia is paramount. Here, director Dane Saeed speaks about the community and their way of life in the Thai border area where he shot his 2011 film, Bunohan.
Malaysians who come up to me, and they're all from Kelantan or have lived in Kelantan, say, oh my God, you know, you're really like telling the story about, you know, this place called Bunohan, because it's set in a kampung called Kampung Bunohan.
And it really exists.
Yeah, it really exists. Just Google it and you'll see Kampung Bunohan close to the Thai border, about literally 15 minutes. But the thing is, what's wonderful is, like, you know, this area is the Badlands of Malaysia. And from what I know as a kid growing up near the area, assassins do exist. And even as late as the early 90s, apparently you can buy, you know, you can go and ask people to kill somebody with a bottle of beer, you know, down in South Thailand. So, you know, it does exist. So it's very much localized. So I didn't glamorize it.
This film and its characters come out of your understanding of this place. Or did you have to do kind of research to...
Partly, it's a combination of a few things. Partly is my understanding of the place, because I grew up there. My father was a cop. And so, you know, he said to me 99% of the... Actually, he happens to say, although this may not, doesn't figure into the film, but 99% of the murders and of that happened in that place is actually the love triangle. And this was going back in his time when it was the 60s, 70s, 80s. So then, you know, I kind of built up on that because I knew certain people. You know, some of them are members of my family who were kind of like, you know, into kickboxing and all that. Because kickboxing, so that's the other brother. And kickboxing is a rites of passage for most young boys, and it still exists today. So I kind of had to do a lot of research by going up there and going to the villages and the communities, because it's very much community-centered. So it's almost as if, you know, kickboxing, I think it's community-centered. It's from 10 years old, 7, all the way up to about 40. People still go in and out, and then they train at some point and do kickboxing. I think it's almost as if it's a way for the community, for the men in the community, to let off steam, I think.
At the same time, Dane Saeed warns us against thinking simply in terms of the CMIO categories when thinking about the people of Malaysia.
The reason I set it on the border is also because I think we're very much aware, most people in Malaysia, that there is no unifying homogeneity in our culture. Everything is always a hybrid form, you know, whether it's between, you know, Hinduism, Hinduism, animism, you know, Islam, Buddhism, and pockets of our culture. I mean, if you go up to Perlis, for example, on the Thai border, or you go up to Kedah on the Thai border, you know, things bleed into each other. There are no definite lines.
Now, more than ever, Malaysian cinema cannot simply be seen as a single object with a simple definition. The multiplicity of people and the multiplicity of stories defies simple and easy categorization. Norman Yusuf notes that the differing representations of urban-rural can also be seen as testimonies to the process of modernization in Malaysia.
In your 2013 doctorate thesis, you touched on the issue of urban-rural in films such as KL Gangster, Rumpit, Bunohan and Budak Kelantan. What can you say about the differing representations between the urban and the rural?
Insofar as I'm concerned, the differing representation of the rural and the urban also have changed over time. If you look at Malay films in the 1980s and 1990s, the rural, the kampung especially, were always depicted in a very rosy manner, rose-tinted views and perspectives. Mm-hmm. All these rural or kampung folks are imbued with all these traditional moral virtues, you know, innocence and naivety and so forth. But it's hard to generalize as well, because there are films also try to blur the binary lines between like rurals associated with all the good things and values and then the urban with more negative or bad values. But what is salient in this different in terms of representation of the rural and the urban, in the 1980s and 1990s, those films can be said as reflecting Malaysia's process of modernization. Very much at a time, especially in the late 70s and early 80s, Malaysia was on the verge of modernization. And then very much, whether directly or indirectly, most of the films, I must say, truly say something about the country's development, you know, and then also correspond to the state or to the government policies, like new economic policies, which was introduced in 1970. But in more contemporary films, you know, like Kel Gangster, Budak Kelantan and Buruhan, these films try to blur the binary lines between the rural being associated with good and the urban being associated with bad or negative mm-hmm. values. These contemporary films tend to address some kind of repercussions brought about by Malaysia's modernity. Buruhan, for example, mm-hmm. it really asserts a strident critique of Malaysia's modernity.
Yeah. Do you see that then in the 80s you think that this modernization, industrialization theme is very, very strong, with the kampung as the ideal happy place in a way? Is the kind of contemporary mood or theme in post-2015 or 2010 Malaysian cinema, is there a similar kind of theme, do you think, or a similar kind of mood, do you think?
One of them, it's about nostalgia. Quite a number of filmmakers tend to invoke nostalgia in their films, such as the late Yasmin Ahmad. Mm. Yeah. That's quite obvious. Chiu Keng Guan, all of his films, Ola Bola, The Journey, Great Day, Woohoo, all to a certain extent deal with nostalgia. And Mamat Khalid is another director who deal with, you know, spoof and parody and try to invoke nostalgia in a very satirical manner, you know, perhaps to critique the present, I think. Mm. But most of these films, I would say they tend to critique the contemporary, the present, say something about that. The past is much better.
This is the spirit that animates the recent documentary by Wu Ming-jin called Return to Nostalgia. In this film, Ming-jin and his team look for a lost film called Seruan Merdeka, the first film made after the Japanese occupation of Malaya.
When we were first approached to make a documentary about Malaysian cinema, I really thought about what film would best represent sort of cinema in our country. I've always been interested in history and interested especially during the World War II part of our country. And once we were doing a lot of research and this one film just stuck to me. The film was Seruan Merdeka. It was actually the first film made after World War II, 1947. It was made independently outside of the two large, at that time there were two large studios, Categories and the Shaw Brothers, and it featured a multiracial cast. So the film was also one of the first films to depict realistic events of our history, which was the World War II, which is the occupation. So I was very fascinated reading about the film, but it was a lost film. So I thought, what better way to show the rest of the world, the rest of Asia at least, this part of our history and also to educate ourselves.
What is important here are the forgotten facets of Malaysian history and that there are many stories about ourselves that remain unexplored. One such unexplored area, according to Norman Yusuf, are the marginalised groups in Malaysia who are often left out.
Malaysian films or Malaysian cinema can reflect, represent, or even imagine to a certain extent, like some of our filmmakers do, imagine Malaysian cultures and Malaysian identities. But the thing is, I just wish that all this film, there were more films that explore and deal with many more issues regarding our identities and our cultures. For example, the representation of the very small minority groups, you know, in Malaysia, many of which are very much underrepresented. For example, the Chinese Peranakan. We hardly see the Chinese Peranakan on screen in Malaysian films. The ethnic groups or tribes in tribal groups in Malaysian Borneo, in Sabah and Sarawak, they are seldom represented in Malaysian films, you know, or the Chinese in Kelantan, very much assimilated to the Malay culture, or the Thai community in the state of Perlis, the Malaysian Thai, So I wish that Malaysian cinema or Malaysian films would deal with and explore, focus on this other marginalized or, you know, minority groups as well.
Perhaps we will never get a clear answer to the question, what is a Malaysian film? Malaysian cinema will always be the subject of argument, debate and change as filmmakers bring ideas and stories to the big screen. On this, Dane Syed says the following.
It has all those elements and ingredients, you know, that make it somewhat of a genre, but I mean, it has been called a cross-genre film or, you know, a game changer in many ways. You know, I don't know. I let the audience and the critics be the judge of that. But at the same time, it is about family relations. And I think it's something which is not just universal, but I think it's in terms of our culture, and particularly, I suppose, in Malay culture, it's things to do with the family relations that pertains to land and within the family, and therefore what comes out in that is greed, lust, corruption, and, you know, basically fighting over property and land. That is the actual obvious story. That is what you see and what you get. I'm also interested, I mean, when I write and make a film, is what are the underlying themes, which I think holds very dearly to my worldview, and is our tie to land is also our ties to the environment and to nature. In a way, subtextually, maybe that's also an element there.
You also play with magical realism in a way that's kind of interesting, and it harkens back to something that you don't really get a lot of in Malaysian cinema, at least it's not done terribly well.
Very much for me, it's very reflective of our culture. I mean, whether you're Indian, Chinese or Malay, you believe in some form of magic. I mean, we've all experienced this as kids. We grew up with it. And so for me, I think, you know, I've been actually criticized the other day saying, oh, magic realism, maybe it's just a gimmick. Well, I don't know. You go and see it for yourself, because I believe that I actually wove it in as very much part of the fabric of the film, the fabric of the story, and therefore it expresses the cultural fabric from which we come from.
Until we know who we are as Malaysians and can embrace the diversity of peoples and cultures who make up this country, then the question of identifying a single identity or definition of Malaysian cinema will be fraught. As William van der Hyde says in his book on Malaysian cinema, any discussion based on homogeneity is untenable. Such a film culture should not be discussed in terms of coherence and common identity, but should acknowledge and actually propose a set of multiple, even contradictory, identities. Perhaps it's better to go out and watch what is on at the cinema to see what stories are being told about us, about who we are and where we are going. This was episode 1 of the 8-part series, Unpacking Malaysian Cinema. In the next episode, we discuss producing and funding films. This has been a collaboration between the University of Nottingham and BFM 89.9. All episodes can be streamed or downloaded from bfm.my and the BFM mobile app. Research and interviews by Elise Schick and Arvina Irene. I'm your host, Thomas Barker. Join us again next week on BFM 89.9, the Business Station.